This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box educational podcast for coaches and players and parents from all over the world, where we bring you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. Hello, everybody. Hope you're doing great. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, and we are live in Curaçao. We just finished the Curaçao Baseball Week, and we had a great time. As you know, you listened to a podcast prior to this where we interviewed some of the coaches at the coaches convention there. The International Sports Group brought in some coaches along with Curaçao Baseball Week and Hensley Mullins. It was outstanding. We had over 55 coaches, had a great time. And we're excited today to talk to Ryan Cienko, who I'm going to tell you a little bit in a minute here, who he is. And he was at Curaçao Baseball Week, did an outstanding job on the catching position. Very unique, very interesting, up to date, scientific. This is something you've got to hear, and more people around the world and in the U.S. have to hear. But before we start, don't forget the usual stuff. Thanks for our current listeners, the people who follow us all the time, for listening. Do us a favor. Don't forget, spread our social media. Anytime we're on Twitter, you know, or Facebook or anywhere, you can just forward that and let people know about us. You know, that just helps the show. It gets it out more. We got more listeners, more people learn, and it just gives us a great opportunity to spread the show all over the place, and we feel it will help a lot of coaches, players, and parents. So we're at Twitter, Baseball Out. You know our Facebook page, baseballoutsidethebox.com. You can also go to our website, same thing, baseballoutsidethebox.com. And don't forget to email me if you got any questions, info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. We love getting your questions, and we answer them right away, so send them out. Any questions you have about the game, the development, anything our speakers said, we will help you any way we can. So now let me tell you, we're going to start with the topic. The topics basically is going to be the specialties and myths of the catching position. So we're going to cover all kinds of stuff, mechanics of, you know, receiving, blocking, throwing, conditioning specific to the catching position. And also we're going to talk strategy with the pitcher-catcher relationship. So there's going to be a lot to be on the show right now. We're going to talk about with Ryan Cienko. Let me tell you just briefly a little bit about Ryan. You can see the show notes on all his information. But for right now, former player at the University of Iowa from 93 to 97. He was a four-year letterman at the catching position. Former also professional player, 7 years. Played with Texas, White Sox, and I got a chance to meet him when we were together in independent ball with the Schaumburg Flyers here in Chicago. That was a great time, and that's how Ryan and I kind of started our relationship. And I really believe that he is one of the top coaches, not only in the U.S., but also around the world. Currently, he's the CEO. Head instructor of his own program, Catch and Throw. We'll talk about that a little bit. You got to go to catchandthrow.com. He goes all over the world, all over the U.S., working with players on the catching position and throwing. He's got all kinds of camps, coaches, clinics. So don't forget that. He was the, and this is something we have in common, also director of baseball operations for and pitching coach for the National Pitching Association. You are all familiar with that. That is the Tom House program. Ryan was with him for many years. I mean, he dealt with the day-to-day operations on the NPA Performance Lab. He dealt with the professional pitching instruction, injury rehabilitation, throwing programs, you name it. He was there with Tom constantly. So, he comes from the background of the scientific part of the game also. And currently, what a great position. You're going to see him continue on into, in my opinion, to professional baseball even higher. But right now, he is the assistant catching coordinator with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Goes all over the U.S., all their minor league camps to work with the catchers and also in the Dominican Republic. So I'll tell you what, let's get started. First of all, let's welcome my good friend and partner in Curaçao, Ryan Cienko. Ryan, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. Great,
so all you had to listen to that whole intro.
Oh my gosh!
That's, yeah, that's right. Like, I'm learning little by little. I'm new with it. I'm new at the podcast, but I know this. I love it. I love doing it. I love to share the information. I love to get new people like yourself on here that, you know, understand that there's a lot to learn in the game. That a lot to learn in the development. There's science behind everything we do. And I was thrilled to have you in Curaçao here with with Hensley Mullins and the group, talking to the coaches. It was, you know, it was an eye opener because I think the catching position is so important. You got some great things. And tell us quickly what you thought about Curacao Baseball Week. I know we're heading home soon.
Yeah, this place is just simply amazing. Never been here before. The people, the island, the views, you know, the food, this incredible hotel that we've been staying at. This whole thing has just been, it's been eye-opening, but also just what a surprise and amazing. You know, I will for sure be coming back, not only hopefully on the baseball front, but also to bring my wife and my kids.
Super, I agree with you, man. We had a great time, great people here. And, you know, the coaching clinic, tell us a little bit about the coaching clinic. You know, kind of what a few things you may have mentioned to some of the coaches, and then we'll get into some of the questions. But, you know, where you kind of started off with the coaches and why you started off in that area.
Yeah, so the first presentation I did was on receiving. It's something that I get to do daily. And I probably care about how people catch a baseball more than I would say 99% of the population in the world, to be honest with you. And, you know, I believe that it's so important simply because it's what we do most. As you said, it's kind of like an undertaught position and it's an undertaught skill. And as time has gone on through baseball, it's starting to get a little bit more traction on how important it really is. So I felt it was pretty necessary to dive in and not only give the basic skills, but also push forward. I think it's a skill that mm-hmm. we can teach pretty easily. But I also feel that if it's not done correctly, you can really put guys at a disadvantage, not only for their position, but then how you deal and help your pitching staff, which is, you know, basically.
All right, now
we're gonna
definitely gonna dive into this area. Before we do, give our audience around the world from your perspective at all levels, whether it be the young kids, whether it be, you know, the guys you're dealing with now at the professional level, give them an idea, you know, what you look for, the characteristics of making a good catcher, even though they may not have it yet. What do you look for that they have potential in that are the most important? And obviously there's a lot to catching, but what are the most important for you?
Sure. You know, it's a question that gets asked quite a bit, even by our scouting department. You know, what do you look for? It's not the same as it used to be. It's not the place where you just throw somebody that it can either hit or, you know, really can't move. Right now, it's a very dynamic position. We look for the most athletic guys that we can. We look for players that are smart. They've got not only this whole catch, block, throw thing, but then you have the entire game planning, identifying the hitters and their strengths and weaknesses, and then going and trying to attack them in the game. So, you know, it's changing, it's evolving into a more athletic, smarter position.
Well, I love what you said. Well, the one comment that I heard was it's not the same as it's always been. And I think that sometimes we all fall into a trap of teaching, you know, how we were taught in the past and how it's always been. But there are better ways. There are new ways. There's some science, you know, science has helped us a great deal. So let's do this. Let's go ahead and, you know, since we talked about receiving, let's go ahead and go right into the receiving part. We'll mm-hmm. take it once, you know, one step at a time with the other topics and begin. Sure. Just like you were talking to the coaches, what you teach when it comes to receiving, that especially might be different. That's what's commonly taught in the past or even now at some times.
Sure. I think where we get hung up is that we're supposed to do certain things. And when I say we're supposed to do, it's just what's been taught to us. You know, you're just supposed to catch the ball. You're just supposed to sit there and let the umpire say, strike your ball. It's really just not how it goes. So, you know, when we're attacking this whole thing as a catcher, the first thing we have to understand is that the strike zone is subjective. The strike zone is just some guy's opinion or woman's opinion, mm-hmm. whoever's officiating the game. And what we need to get is that not only is it pliable and it's this just giant amoeba that, you know, when a ball crosses the plate, somebody says strike or ball, but also that we can, number one, manipulate it slightly, or we can help influence the umpire to say strike or ball. And our actions actually have a large piece in this. It happens so fast, it doesn't matter what level you're on, whether someone's throwing 40, 50, 70, or 100 miles an hour, it's happening pretty quickly. And where we get caught up is that we all study it, we all watch it, but you're watching a wide angle from 450 feet away. The game looks a lot easier. And I'm sure, you know, you've talked to many people who describe the game as hard. And I don't think that's an understatement by any means. So when we're talking about how hard and how fast things happen, there are ways for us to improve this probability of someone saying strike. And the difference for a good catcher is that you can get that person to say strike more often. I think that's a huge, misunderstanding that people have, is that we do have influence on that person behind us, and we need to go and do whatever we can to be ready for every single pitch that is thrown. And that might be 140, 160 times per game. We don't get to choose what pitch matters. You know, people look at the game and they'll watch it and they're like, oh, that pitch in the eighth inning with two outs and, you know, a 3-2 pitch with the bases loaded. Like, that's the most important pitch. That's what won and lost the game. It might have been the second pitch in the fourth inning where, you know, it was called ball on a 1-1 count. That could have been the entire game because it could have switched, you know, the path of what was going on. So good catchers, are prepared 100% of the time for each pitch. And that's a hard thing to
and
do.
I watched you on stage and you were talking, when you were talking about receiving here, you talked about hand position, you talked about where the umpire sits. Talk a little bit to our audience. I know on a podcast, sometimes it's not as easy to describe, but this should be okay because, I want the audience to understand, what the hand does when you receive the ball, the umpire, where he stands and understanding that and so forth.
Well, like I said, we're playing to what this person behind us, who's officiating the game, right? We're playing to what the umpire sees. He needs to be able to, number one, see the ball, see where we present it to him to make his decision. What we need to do is understand what it looks like from behind. So when you're training catchers, I personally like to go and act as the umpire quite a bit. So if my eyes are telling me that it looks pretty good, that's great. But as soon as I get to a different position, not only does it speed up more, when you're sitting right behind the catcher and you're blindly looking at a ball coming at you, you've got to not only read it and track it, but then you have to determine if it looks good. So I think that's where, again, that wide view from center field where it looks like the catchers are moving it or the ball's moving in different directions. When you're up close and in the fire with the catcher and the umpire, man, things happen really quickly. So, the umpire themselves, they're looking at it. They're not allowed to guess along with the game because if they guess wrong, they're really in trouble. It happens so fast. So they need to just see the ball, see how it comes in, assuming that it is a strike, and then letting the ball tell them otherwise. So that's why it's so important for our presentation and how we are receiving the ball and where our hand is going as we're catching the ball, making sure that it stays somewhat in the strike zone or improves a little bit. What we don't want to have happen is the path of the ball take us, if you're receiving a ball thrown from close to 6 feet high on the release and you're 60 feet away, man, that thing's going downward. If you're just in the way of the ball and letting it push you down into the ground on that same path, you're really not doing the job that you're supposed to. We're trying to even that ball out, improve it. We certainly don't want it going away from the strike zone to give the umpire more information to say,
take us now, because I remember this, take us through, the catcher's behind the plate. Take us through how you teach maybe even picking up the ball from the pitcher, and tracking it all the way to receiving it.
Sure. So, when we've all seen these things, New York Times did a really cool, infographic kind of thing where And this is a while back where they're saying, you know, you got about 0.4 of a second on a 90 mile an hour pitch. When you're set up, you're about 60 feet away. So that distance most likely is not going to ever change, right? He set up 60 feet. We're about 5 feet off his release point on average. It's like five feet, 5 inches, you know, so we'll call it 6 just for the sake of argument. And we set up 5 to 6 feet behind the plate. So we're right at that 60 foot mark. What science is telling us is that at 90 miles an hour, the ball travels, it's something like 14 and a half feet, 15 feet, every 10th of a second. So as that ball travels out, science says, hey, the first 10th of a second, we're just processing them in an image. So that gives us now, you know, we've knocked it down. We're at 45 feet. The middle section, the next 2/10 of a second, are really important for us as catchers simply because that's where we have to determine the three main things that the ball tells us. One is going to be the spin, so the pitch type. We called it, so generally we should know what it should look like. Second is how fast it's going. Again, generally you know as you're catching someone the range of speeds. Okay, so if he's 90 to 94, you have that general range in your mind, you know how fast that happens. The hardest part for us as catchers in that middle section here is figuring out where the ball not only is, not only where it's going, but most importantly, where it is going to end up. Because as we get to that last 10th of a second, and it's probably not a full 10th of a second for the sake of argument here, though, we're breaking up into quarters. We need to be in position. The difference between us and a hitter is going to be that a hitter can be early or late and still have success. You could hit it down the right field line, the left field line, out to the gaps, whatever. You also have the option of taking, where a catcher, if you're on time, late, or certainly if you miss it, you've messed up. So we need to be early. So that last 10th of a second I'm describing, we almost need to be in position. So when the ball gets to us, where it ends up, we need to have already been there. So that way we can absorb the forces of the ball. We can have our leverage, which we'll get into. And then we can make sure that the ball is going in a positive direction for us rather than out of the strike zone or away from, you know, a place where the umpire.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. I mean, you can, as a very good catcher, you can get a lot of balls that were balls called strikes. And a bad catcher can do, you know, vice versa. Now in the past, sure, it's always been called framing. Explain to our audience, maybe you call it differently, but explain to them, you know, high pitch, you know, outside pitch, inside pitch, pitch down low. I think the low one's always the most difficult, it seems like, or the most controversial one. We got different ways to do it. Tell us how you teach it to your guys and why.
So there's different techniques that people use. We choose to use a technique that allows us to absorb the forces a little bit. So the term is framing. It's something, it's not necessarily a term I like. I like to think of it as receiving. You know, just the way that that it's interpretive. Receiving is, you know, having something come to you, having something absorb into you, where framing in the classical sense is that rigid, you know, outward move where you're just trying to stop the ball and then you're manipulating it with your hand. For me, that's not the best way to do it. I think that the umpire sees it more. I also think that you have, you know, a collision. So if you're making an outward move and the ball is coming in, you're going to lose. That ball has way too much force. Also, as we work forward and as we push forward, you know, you're fighting a couple different things, Ben. You're fighting time and timing, and you're also fighting distance. So as I close that gap, the ball is speeding up. I've given myself less time. But also, if I'm trying to catch a ball at a specific spot at a specific time, I have to be pretty precise on all those things that I talked about earlier. I need to know the speed pretty perfect, and I also need to know exactly where that ball is going to end up, or, you know, I'm going to lose that battle. So what we try to really work on as we work with our guys is giving them as much margin for error as possible. Again, I'll go back. You say it 1,000 times a day, man. This is hard. The skill is hard. The, you know, the game is speeding up to you know, speeds that we've never seen before. The average fastball's gone up a couple of miles an hour from, you know, not too long ago. And when you're talking about high rates of speed and increasing it by 1 or 2 miles an hour, that's a lot of space and a lot of time you're robbing the catcher, catcher of. So we need to make sure that we are, you know, great with our timing and buying back some of that time before the, you know, the ball is released, which we'll get to. But we also have to understand that this is hard. And by trying to be so perfect, you really put yourself at a disadvantage. So that's one piece, right? The time, timing thing, and then the distance, it's one piece. Now we're talking about where are we when the ball hits us? You know, so we certainly think about our leverage and our strength. But even before that, we're going to think about how we're setting up, where we're setting up, and what the umpire is going to see even before the ball gets to us. So our angles of our setup, whether it's we're squaring up to the ball a little bit more, whether we have our right foot in front, whether we have that more classic look with our left foot behind, we're just making sure that when the ball comes to us, number one, we're going to be receiving it in a place of strength. And then secondly, how does the umpire see us? So if I put my body on the corner and I'm, you know, say angled to where that classic look where my right foot is steep behind my left foot, now my shoulders and my shoulders and my hips are now pointing almost to second base. Now when that ball comes in, not only is the ball, we're asking the ball to come more at our left leg where it's harder for us to you know, make any moves, but then also the ball is traveling across where our strength is. Just by moving our feet somewhat parallel to each other, equal to each other, now that ball is coming right to the middle of our body. Our body might look like it's on the plate more. It might, you know, visually give the umpire a different look, but also then when the ball is received by us, hopefully they come, you know, the pitcher throws it near your target and you're able to control the ball a lot easier. So again, everything that we're doing is playing to the view of the umpire. Yes, we're trying to help the pitcher get a good look with his target. Yes, we want to give him, you know, everything that he needs. That's obviously number one. But a close second is making sure that this guy who's standing behind us has the best view to say strike.
And Ryan, you hear again, so, just listen to talks out there. I want you to cover this because I want to really understand, to have an audience understand this. You hear two things a lot in catching when receiving. You hear you know, hold it or catch it and hold, and I also hear sway right to left. Or you see a lot of guys teaching that. Give us your opinion of those two and how what you teach.
Yeah, well, one, again, we're going to work on absorbing the forces. So by receiving it, we're going to have our elbow and our wrist do a lot of work. You know, the way that we talk about it is our wrist is like the shock absorber in the car that takes the initial hit. And then our elbow, our tricep, is going to be the brakes. So as that ball hits us, the ball can come back to us. And in fact, we would like it to come back to us some. That way you're absorbing the forces. You're allowing the ball to kind of naturally stop rather than, again, we're not, you know, when you're saying like, hey, I want you to go out and stop the ball, that's an outward move, not only with my arm, but also then with my hand. So I have two things working out as the ball hits it. And as you look at video, and thankfully we have an incredible video system that I can pull up anything and watch, as I do pretty much every single day, you know, what the ball is doing to guys' gloves when they're receiving it. So when, you know, when it's all quantified and we can see who's good at it or who's better than others at it, there's some certainly there are certainly some qualities that some guys do and some guys don't. It's not only physical, but then it becomes these timing issues that allow the guy to be in position or not when the ball is hitting him. So, you know, when we're receiving the ball, when we're allowing the ball to be absorbed into our body, that's where we talk about kind of our angles. And we're going to talk about how we want the wrist and the elbow as points of leverage for us. And this is another piece where we're slightly different. The half moon that everyone is taught, and you know, anybody who's been around catching at all has heard this term about a half moon, where a thumb stays underneath the low ball and we kind of go across the top of it mm-hmm. as the side of a moon and around. That's great if the ball is literally like right down the middle as we catch it, because then the ball can be absorbed straight back into our strength. As we go to the bottom, this is where we're slightly different. And I think if you look at the best guys in the world and those who rate high, they do it slightly different. They're basically taking that same half moon and throwing it on its side, as we like to say it. We're just flipping it up. So there's nothing different about the move. We're just putting it on its side. And now that ball that's down, my fingers, actually the top of my fingers are now facing the ground. My thumb is out of the way, so I don't get it hit anymore. And now my wrist and elbow are, you know, in points of leverage. So as they absorb and as they go back, they're actually moving positively towards the strike zone, rather than having to either manipulate it in a vertical move or have the ball kind of roll our elbow or wrist, you know.
Yeah, you know, and I was very lucky because we went to the field, Ryan. And for folks out there around the world and also in the U.S., Ryan Cienko, we're on with assistant catching coordinator with the Los Angeles Dodgers, who you know went to the World Series Game 7. Unbelievable. Great, great series. But I was fortunate to go on the field, and this is why you need to attend. And go to Ryan's website, catchandthrow.com, and he's also on Twitter, catch_and_throw. Check him out. He's got a lot of great stuff there. Plus, you can see all his camps that he has. Try to get to one of his camps, because I visually saw what he was talking about and him working with a catcher where he just talked about that half moon underneath. And I'll tell you what, it will change your game. It will change the way you look at catching and receiving a baseball. All the stuff he's talked about, but you'll actually get a chance to see it live. So check it out. Again, catchandthrow.com. Ryan, the other, you know, it's not easy. We went to the field, and I know, as I mentioned earlier, not easy on a podcast, but let's give our audience a little taste, because it would take too long to give them all the drills, but give them a little taste on the receiving, maybe one or two examples of a catching drill they can start with their young kids.
There's a lot of ways, and I agree with you, man. This is something that if I put a video in front of you, you see it really quickly. If we go get dirty in the dirt a little bit, man, it's something that you can feel within like 2 minutes. So it's a little harder to describe. I would say, you know, number one, if you're going off a machine, that's the easiest, because you feel the force of the ball. But if you don't have access to a machine, I just take one of the heavier balls, you know, the balls that the guys hit, kind of steal a few of those. I like to use the heavy ball, especially when we're working on the bottom of the zone, because the guys can get that instant feedback of the ball carrying them or not. What we will do sometimes is preset our angles. So as the ball's coming in off a machine, especially if you preset the angle, elbow might be a little higher, wrist and fingers are facing downward. As the ball hits you, you can feel how your wrist and elbow allow the ball to come back towards almost like your sternum. I do that one. I like to use a lacrosse ball sometimes, where I will bounce it, so it has a little bit of speed as it accelerates, and you have to feel the force come back to you. I believe in making these big movements and then tightening them up. So whenever we're doing anything with the guys to start off with, I'm going to have them, you know, feel as they're reaching for the ball and as they're getting in position, as that ball hits them, I want the ball to come back to their sternum, you know, the back to the middle of the strike zone. So anytime we're doing that, whether it be with the heavy ball or lacrosse ball or baseball, they're going to make big, large movements so they can feel it. And then we can always tighten those things up. In reality, the ball is probably going to travel, 6 to 8 inches as you receive it, as you're absorbing these forces, and, you know, not really getting past 90 degrees in your elbow. But, you know, we're going to exaggerate them first, tighten them up as we go, and then you start to feel like that absorption in the hand, in the wrist, then stopping it with the elbow and the tricep. Another drill that we like is basically an angle. I try to make the drills mm-hmm. as realistic as possible. I will sometimes, you know, I don't, I see these on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. I see some of these drills that guys do, and it makes me kind of like, it makes my belly burn a little bit. Simply, and here's why, and I'm not bagging on anybody. I have to then take those drills, if I were going to use them and present them to men. And those men are going to look at me and say, I'm not going to do that. So I understand that when you're working with kids, you're trying to make it fun, that you might want to add in some stuff. But I also would ask the question, like, how is this going to help me in the game? How am I actually going to use this drill? So, you know, I'm not going to be doing a push up and jumping and turning and having a ball thrown at me. I need to work on, you know, being in position, working on the timing of things. I need to be perfect with that. So then I have a little bit more of margin of error when the ball gets to me. Personally, I would like to do those kind of drills than, you know, something where we're just moving around and makes it look like we're really working hard. So our drills are a little bit more simple than maybe than others. But, you know, that's kind of how we go about it. So there's going to be a lot of machine work. I will do some angles, so you have to feel like you have to cut the ball off. And that's about as crazy as I get, where it's unrealistic, you know, moving the machine an extra 10 feet to the side so it's really cutting across or cutting back into you. You know, that's about as creative as I get with it. So the guys understand, like, hey, man, this is what we're doing in the game. This is what you're doing with the live arm. This is how we're going to go about getting you better rather than doing.
Well, I love that you said, you know, keeping it simple and relating it more to game situations. I know we tell coaches all the time, don't just do a drill just to do it because it looks fancy and it does something, but do it so it's productive and the kids or players actually get something out of it. Now, I saw you do some drills with bare hand also. And, you know, I want to talk to our young coaches out there because everybody thinks you always have to do it with a glove first. Can you do some of these drills barehanded?
Sure, certainly. You know, the one thing that I will do is I'll take the, you know, the little, I think Skills or some of those other companies make the little baseballs, you know, especially when you're using with youth, I guess, you know, the difference with us. And I know you spoke about it is like, you know, you play football, they give you a smaller football. You play basketball, you get a smaller basketball. We're saying playing with the same size ball. So if I'm going to toss my 7-year-old son a regular size baseball, like it's twice as big as his hands, like he can't get to it. So I will use the smaller baseball sometimes when we're doing bare hand stuff. Again, it's more about making sure that we're catching the ball in between the thumb and the index finger, and feeling that our hand is in position. So when the ball hits it, it's going to present really well for the umpire. I like to do that sometimes at the beginning because the glove is heavy for young players and it can kind of get them in bad positions. Also, young players sometimes catch the ball incorrectly in their gloves. So, you know, making sure that the guys are receiving the ball in a place where not only they can control it, but it's not going to like hurt them. You know, safety is a huge key, especially when we're talking about the catching position. If there's anything we're doing to compromise safety, you know, obviously we should not be doing that. So, you know, I think the bare hand drills sometimes teach the guys how to properly catch the ball, whether it be the positioning in their hand and then most certainly the positioning in their glove. So it's not, you know, number one hitting on their thumb and or crushing them in the ring finger, you know, the way that the gloves might be broken in. So, you know, making sure the guys are in position, making sure that they're safe, not only with their glove, but the rest of their equipment is kind of the top priority.
You know, what I loved about your talks, there were some really unique things that we call them thinking outside the box, but it's really just thinking exactly how things might work biomechanically, you know, when how actually things happen when you do something. I want to get into the throwing. I want to get into the transfer and the throwing because there's some unique things you said there. But quickly, before we do, I also heard something interesting in the stance that I love. You talked about the catching stance and just briefly, you know, maybe how the feet might be in a catching stance, but then more importantly, when there's a runner on base, big difference in how you teach it. And I really love it. So talk about that a little bit.
I think anytime you're talking about stance and setup, it's unique to that person. you know, we did talk a little bit earlier about, you know, angling and how we're going to make sure that the umpire has a good view. That is so important at all times because we're catching more than we're doing anything else. But there are going to be times where, hey, we need to spread out maybe slightly. We need to get up a little bit. But it's not that classic, hey, I'm going to get up so everybody thinks mm-hmm. I'm ready kind
Which
of
feels
look.
Uncomfortable at times.
It's going to be a position. Sure. And I always tell the guys, like, give me the position you can sit and watch television, you know, for the next hour. And it's much different than the initial stance they like to give you. So we can modify from that stance rather than, hey, this is what somebody told me I had to do. I have to get my feet, you know, 2.5 feet apart. I need to get my butt way up in the air. You know, number one, it's uncomfortable. Number two, it's unrealistic to think that someone can sit there for 6-7 months, you know,
yeah,
every single day while they're doing it. And it doesn't matter. You know, I get this argument from people or this discussion from people many times saying, well, that works in pro ball. And, you know, yeah. I'm dealing with you. the guys in pro ball are much stronger. They should be able to handle it much more than you. And if we're talking about that, I feel like it's a flawed discussion, because what we would like to do is let these kids be as comfortable as possible. Let them be, you know, in positions that they feel that they can actually move, in positions that they can actually be efficient with those movements and be explosive. So, you know, just because it looks like to the naked eye that someone is not ready, it does not mean that. And certainly it does not mean that they are lazy if they were to miss a ball. That one I hear a lot too. Like, the ball gets by him, they're like, well, he wasn't ready. You know, he's been ready for the last 150 pitches. I don't know why he wouldn't be ready for this specific one, mm-hmm. you know, based on a setup. So, you know, there are times where we will, you know, modify the guys, especially when they're new coming out of the draft, been told what to do and how to look. You know, you give them the freedom to be who they are, and you sometimes see a really more dynamic athlete, and also an athlete that can sustain those movements over time, because he has more strength, has more flexibility, has more, you know, comfort, you know, in those positions. So I would say mm-hmm. that's where we're just slightly different. I'm not going to make somebody get up just so it looks good to my eye, which is really hard sometimes, because you do see, and as a coach, and you know this, and anyone who's listening knows this, you kind of coach to your comfort level sure. of what your lens is telling you, you know, and, you know, my body and your body and anyone else's, we're very, very different. And we certainly move different, have, you know, you can't tell that my right hip hurts, you know, you can't tell that my left calf is tired. And you telling me to get in a different position maybe just makes me worse of an athlete. And I certainly don't know, I mean, you know, what those guys are going through on a daily basis, unless they're in constant communication with every little nick that they get. So, you know, I might ask a guy if he misses a ball, like, hey, did you mess that one up or did you get stuck? Oh, I just messed it up. Okay, great. No big deal. Like, the world's still going to turn. If I got stuck, okay, well then let's talk about it. Let's go look at it on video. Let's figure out what we could have done a little better to make that movement easier for you. I think it's all just modifying from where they feel comfortable and where they're in good positions. And if we do that, then we're allowing them to be the best athlete that they can be, not just a catcher who's been told
sure.
to get in.
And you know, coaches around the world, you know, if you're listening, you know, and taking notes, there's a lot of good notes here. You heard Ryan talk about video. Use the video. Everybody's got it now on their cameras. There's all kinds of programs you can use. So that way you really understand what that player's doing. So I think that's great. Ryan, now, you know, once they, you know, they catch the ball, one of the hardest things, you know, has got to be to transfer. And I really enjoyed the talk that you gave on, you know, how to transfer the ball. So go ahead and lead us into the transfer and the throwing part, because that, I know that's different too.
I think the biggest thing that you deal with as a catcher is that you forget you're a catcher. Your first job is to catch the ball. Sometimes when a runner runs, we get into throw mode before we really get to the catch mode. and it puts us in bad positions. The same with blocking. You know, we have, you know, I was working with a player just last week where a youth player, and I said, okay, he said he had some trouble blocking. I said, okay, let's look at it. And he did this some crazy move, and his dad and I looked at each other like, oh my gosh, what just happened? You know? And we got to stop thinking that, hey, we have one move to block, one move to throw, one move to catch. We're all catchers. And, you know, that's what we start with. That's what we are in the middle. And then when we're done with that, then we can become something else. And it puts us in great positions to do other things such as throwing. So, you know, when we're talking about throwing, we're talking very simply about making sure that we, number one, catch it. Number two, get the ball into our right hand. And then number three, we just get on our right leg. If we can turn and get on our right leg, then it's just you being an athlete and throwing the ball. We get in trouble by, again, doing what we were told and, you know, shoving the ball to our right ear, making sure our hands get in the, you know, a certain position. My hands might not do that. Your hands might not do that. So, you know, the first piece of it, making sure we catch it and we're in position with balance and posture to do that, is key. Second, you know, I have everyone clap their hands. You know, I think that's the easiest place to see where someone should make their exchange or their transfer is where they clap their hands. We've all clapped our hands probably tenfold of any time we've ever had a baseball thrown at us, maybe even more than that, 100-fold. And, you know, your hands naturally come together a certain way. Some people, you know, are very even together. Some people go one hand on top of the other. Some people are down by their waist. Some people are up by their neck. You know, generally it's in the middle of your body, and generally both hands are coming together. But it doesn't mean that it's always like that. Maybe someone claps simply with their left hand, their right hand stays still. Well, when we're making our exchanges, we need to know that. And then we have to have that same kind of feel because our hands naturally come together there. And then if our hands come naturally together in that same way, they're going to separate in the way that you would naturally do it to go and throw. So, you know, I don't believe in artificially telling someone you have to have your hands here, they need to go to this position or not. I'm going to ask them, was that comfortable to clap your hands? So when our you know, a youth guy or a high school or even a pro guy, when they get in trouble, I'm going to look at where their hands came together first. You know, that might be the big root of the problem. We will see the ball tailing or the ball going high, or, you know, maybe it was slow. We'll see that. That's obvious. But that doesn't always mean that that's necessarily what the problem was. It could have been, hey, my hands were a little long, or they came together in a weird position, and then it took me out of my natural ability to be athletic and throw. So we're always going to start there. The second piece that I and anyone else, you know, when we're looking at catchers, we're talking about is making sure that we just turn our body and get on our right leg. I like to think of it as like a big leg lift. If we lift our leg high, you're like a pitcher, or you're in a crow hop position as an outfielder would be, and you're on your right leg, you're pretty much in position to go and throw. So as we're working with guys, and I work with a really smart guy named Travis Barbary, who is our catching coordinator. And when we're doing throwing work, we're just getting up on that right leg and really feeling the push to go forward. The drill I'm not a huge fan of is that T drill, where we're working really fast and getting our arm up, but we're getting stuck in the middle. So if we're going to do that drill, we need to modify it so it's getting on that right leg. So as that left leg comes down, man, you're pushing to go and throw. We're just making sure that we're in the strongest, most leveraged position that we can be in. And, you know, then it's just a matter of you being able to advance a ball forward, you know. And if my left hip is going towards the target and I have balance and posture, the ball should go out, you know, at least
Ryan,
in the
when
right
you
direction.
Talk about the throwing, you're hearing more of a, you know, a natural motion, possibly maybe let the athleticism come out of the player is what I'm understanding. Have you had players where you've had to change their arm action, or, you know, or anything that in the throwing aspect, or, you know, or is it just natural and you let them do what they do?
I think if you end up changing a guy, it's because they do have an artificial arm action a lot of the times. You know, like you mentioned earlier, I had worked with Tom, Tom House, for a long time. Watching him work with guys on what their arm actually does was mind-blowing to me. I remember there was a time we were at Mission Bay High School down in San Diego. I can't remember. It was one of the local colleges, USD or UCSD or something. A pitching coach brought a kid and said, "Hey, I can't fix this." And it was the most messed up thing I'd ever seen. His arm did, you know, went down, it cocked back, it went up. It did all these different things. And Tom watched him for a little bit, you know, and I don't know if the kid had been overcoached or he had some kind of issue, whatever. But after about 15 minutes of Tom kind of watching and talking, and all of a sudden he just matched up with like his front side to his back, and there's a twist and a turn and this, and all of a sudden this kid is throwing like a normal dude. It looked funky. It did look funky, but the ball was coming out hot and it was repeatable and, you know, all the things that you'd want. So that was maybe my biggest aha moment with arm action in itself, is like, okay, the arm is doing what it wants to do, however your body's going to go about it. Now we just need to match up the rest of our bodies to let that happen. So it might be a little bigger step. It might be a little stronger front side. It might be a slightly different angle with your torso. But if we allow our arm to do what it does, many times it will come out just the same. So I don't like to mess with arms very much unless there's a huge, like, obvious problem that is killing a guy. You know, many times we'll see it with catchers where there's like a hitch. Sometimes it might be just a matter of you holding the hands when you come together to get your exchange, is keeping your hands together for a split second more. Many times a hitch comes by you trying to get the ball out, and then it's waiting. It doesn't know what to do, and it has to restart. So, you know, it's adjusting timing rather than adjusting movement that might be the answer. You know, it's hard to say. It's a case-by-case thing, obviously, but I've seen it a lot on the pitching end. I try not to do too much of it on the catching side, simply because if we match up, you know, what the hands and feet are doing, and if we do it in the right sequence,
well, let's do this. Let's give our audience a quick example. Here would be an obvious example because you brought it up. You know how kids were taught or players were taught in the past, and I know, you know, when I was younger, this was taught also. When you said, you know, bring the hands to the ear, you know, bring the hands back to the ear. Let's say a catcher comes to you with that technique. How would you break it?
Sure. First, I would just ask them where they clap their hands.
Yeah.
I would start right there. And I said, listen, do that. And then I want you to bring your hands to your ear and then clap them. You know, and it's like, well, it's really uncomfortable. It's hard to do. And I think if you're listening to this, just bring your hands up by your ear where we're supposed to get the ball, you know, where we're supposed to, quote unquote, get the ball out. And now your elbows cocked back. And I just want you to clap your hands at your ear. Like, it's hard to do. And we're asking a guy to spin in space, get rid of the ball, and get the ball back here. And that's where I'm supposed to throw from. It gives you such little margin of error to do anything. And it's uncomfortable, you know. So I would start by isolating that movement of, okay, I've caught it. Now get your hands together, you know, wherever they come together, and stop. And then maybe we'll do a little throwing from there. Maybe we'll do, you know, where – you know, there's a full progression of stuff we do, but like, I'm going to catch it, get the ball in my hand, pause, and then I'll throw. Then start to blend that movement into a little bit, you know, faster, to where it's get the ball out, turn and throw. And then we'll start to add in the feet and everything else. I mean, I would never try to do it all at once with all the movements. There's just too many moving parts. But, you know, isolating it to where your hands come together. And if you watch the best throwers in the world, they're not shoving their hand all the way to their ear with their elbows sure. up high. Like it just
and
doesn't
now,
happen like that. So
I got to bring this out too, because I thought it was interesting when and this was something that during the talk, you know, the audience had a few questions on this, and I loved it. You mentioned at one time during the talk where you, and this could be the last thing on throwing, unless you have something else you'd like to add. Where you catch it sometimes is where you're going to throw it from. Explain that.
Yeah, I mean, there's times where the ball is going to mm-hmm. push you into positions, right? And we're trying to be as balanced and repeatable as possible, but it does happen quickly. So in the same way that an infielder has to charge a ball and get the ball out maybe a little differently or a little lower, he's still going to find mm-hmm. some like common points in there. But, you know, it might have to be a little bit more dynamic. We have some really dynamic throwers with the Dodgers, and I've seen them, you know, kids that are in college and high school the same. If their hands work easy in different places, then there's no reason why you can't take the ball out a little lower. Even the release can be a little lower. There's no right way to do it. I think it's just a matter of how your body is going to move, how your body is going to move best. It's going to be how it moves explosive and efficiently, and how you can stay mm-hmm. as athletic as possible. So, you know, you're not going and telling a shortstop that he can't throw from a little sure. bit lower than his shoulder, right? And you're not telling an outfielder when he's making great throws that he needs to get his hands up or that he needs to shove the ball back as he's running through a crow hop. And there's no reason why we as catchers in a position where you're squatting down and having people just throw stuff all over the place, why you sure. aren't allowed to be dynamic either. You know, you need to be a dynamic athlete back there. You can't be a robot. You can't do everything so rigid and perfectly, because the variables are through the roof and the variables change on every single pitch.
And what I loved about it was that you also showed examples, whether it be major league guys, other guys who went into those positions and threw the ball and did real well and got the guy out, or, you know, just did a very good job. Now, folks, I'm going to break here for a second. I'm going to tell you why. The podcast Baseball Outside the Box has never done this before, but we are getting so much great information that on the run, just like you would sometimes in practice organization, you see your practice running and you see something that doesn't go well, you're going to make an adjustment. Well, that's a good coach. You got to make that adjustment on the run sometimes to change the practice up a little bit. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to take a 5-second break, because this may be a podcast where we're going to have two segments, segment one and two, because we got so much to cover with Ryan. This is outstanding. Stand by. We're going to take a break just for 5 seconds, and we'll be right back with Baseball Outside the Box and your host, Pete Caliendo.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.